The waters of Pearl Harbor, from its narrow entrance to its inner reaches, are warming in the early sunlight. The sound of church bells drifts across from nearby Honolulu. At 7:54 a.m., perched high on a water tank at the Navy Yard, sailors prepare to raise a blue and white flag, the signal requiring that, in 6 minutes precisely, the Stars and Stripes is to be hoisted. Who sees what first will become lost in the clamor of memory. Bandsmen forming up aboard the battleship USS Nevada spot dots in the sky to the southwest. At the Marine barracks, men changing the guard glance up as a line of planes flying low swoops over the main gate of the Navy Yard. Admiral William Furlong, waiting for the breakfast call on the quarterdeck of the mine lair USS Oglala, watches as a solitary aircraft flies low over an islet in the center of the harbor. Logan Ramsey, a lieutenant commander at the Naval Air Station, possibly sees the same plane. It should not be there, Ramsey thinks. Not at the moment of the little ceremony with which the U.S. Navy greets every day of the year. This must be some madcap U.S. pilot, flat-hatting, flying recklessly low, and he attempts to make out the plane's number. He does not see what falls from the aircraft before it pulls up and away. Then he hears an explosion, and suddenly understands. The airplane they have been watching, Ramsey snaps to the duty officer at his side, is Japanese. Then he runs, it is no distance, to the radio room across the hall. He orders an immediate broadcast in plain English, 8 words that will galvanize the nation. Air raid on Pearl Harbor, X. This is no drill. At virtually the same moment, the reality dawns on others. At the changing of the guard at the Marine barracks, a veteran sergeant tells his commanding officer, "Sir, those are Japanese warplanes." The officer, realizing he is right, orders the bugler to sound the call to arms. Over near the dry dock, a Marine colonel will recall, there is a terrific blast, and flames and smoke shoot hundreds of feet into the air. Men are stumbling out of the barracks, wide-eyed, dazed. Some are dressed. Some are lurching into pants and shorts on the run. 2 or 3 are wrapped in towels. Someone screams, "Get out of the building! Take cover under the trees!" Someone else yells, "Get inside! Get inside! They're gonna strafe!" Bombs whistle to earth. There are thunderous explosions. "You can see the morning sunlight glisten on the bombs as they fall," the colonel remembers. "Silvery flashes like trout or mackerel jumping." A few stray machine guns begin to bark. A few riflemen aim their pieces skyward and let fly. God knows why. Elsewhere, the atmosphere is surreal. Hastening to his post, a senior officer finds his workplace filled with church music. "The Japanese were bombing the hell out of things on the outside," he will recall. "And here is this officer's radio launching forth with Rock of Ages cleft for me and What a Friend We Have in Jesus." Many mistake the din outside for the noise of a training exercise. Players on golf courses are displeased. "Christ," grouses an admiral, "why doesn't anyone tell me anything around here? I didn't know we'd invited the Russians for fleet maneuvers." One disgruntled golfer exhorts the military to go play its war games elsewhere. Some, though, are not disturbed at all. One army wife will slumber on for hours. In his Honolulu hotel room, Christian Scientist Monitor correspondent Joseph Harsh wakes his wife to tell her sagely, he is a war correspondent, that the racket sounds like a good imitation of an air raid. Then they both doze off again. In his quarters, Admiral Husband Kimmel, Commander-in-Chief of the Pacific Fleet, is very much awake. About 25 minutes earlier, at about 7:30 a.m., a duty officer has phoned to report messages from a destroyer and a patrolling plane that a suspected Japanese submarine may have been sunk outside Pearl Harbor. Kimmel has said he will get right over to the office. Now, during a second call to the admiral about the incident, the duty officer is interrupted. A yeoman has rushed into headquarters with news that Pearl Harbor is under attack. Outside his house, waiting for the car that will rush him the 200 yards to headquarters, the admiral can only watch as Japanese aircraft pulverize his ships. To Navy wife Grace Earle, a neighbor, he looks stricken, white as a sheet. Kimmel has understood at once, from the sheer number of aircraft involved, that this is no hit-and-run raid. It is rather something terrible.